10 odd minutes just giving you a quick overview of where, you know, we see the main demand, you know, and growth drivers that are there. And then we can discuss it a little bit more granularly on, you know, segment basis. Please feel free to ask questions as we run through this. So you see, fundamentally, in terms of growth drivers for us, it's really being driven. The largest portion is coming from new infrastructure that's being set from the renewable energy side. It's happening not only in India, but it's happening in most parts of the world. So you have renewable energy coming in the form of solar and wind. In addition to that, there is a revival of nuclear power, which is also being considered as clean energy today because the emission is relatively very low. So there you've got cables going into the generating assets itself. So, you know, solar panels within the solar farm, cables going into the windmills, a lot of cables going to any nuclear plant. So there's one portion that's in the plant itself. Then there is a second piece, which is then evacuation from that into a grid. So either it goes into a regional grid or a national grid, depending on the country and the format that's in place. So that's one really big driver. Transformer oil is very linear with whatever infrastructure goes into the transformer, meaning into the transformation, stepping up, stepping down, you know, etc. Right. So that's one big driver. Second driver that's coming is from public transportation. So you've got every major city in the world is, you know, adding to subways, metros, rail transportation, because it's a much cleaner form of transport. So that's another portion coming in. In India, the railway spends are very high. You see the budget allocations also and the whole Vande Bharat and all this. And we can discuss that in a little bit more detail when we come to the cable conductor segment. So that's another driver. The third driver is basically in terms of data movement. So on the conductor side, we have a range of, we have a product called OPGW, which is earlier you had on transmission line just a ground wire. Today you have a ground wire with a fiber optic cord. And these are high capacity fiber optics, you know, cables that run inside of that wire. And that's the backbone of, you know, national movement of data. So even today, the two largest data transporters are Power Grid and the Indian Railways, you know, across the country. You never hear their name because we are actually buying from Reliance or, you know, from a broadband, Airtel, a broadband operator, but these are the guys who are carrying it. So every transmission line new going in is coming in with this optical function. Also, this 5G requires a huge increase in the amount of cabling. And it's not only fiber optic, but it's also copper. And for saving space and right of way, whatever, these are coming out in the form of hybrid products. So same cable has both fiber optic and copper in it. So, you know, that's sort of the third area of growth. The fourth area of growth really is just basic increase in electrical consumption happening at the last mile. So electric car coming in, you know, more usage of electrical appliances and as far as, you know, usage is concerned. So your last mile wiring is increasing, your house wires, your low tension cables, etc. So these are, like, you know, four major, you know, areas of growth that we see, you know, across the company. The good thing is that growth is coming not only in India, but in most cases it's coming across the world at the same time. And therefore, companies that have the products and have the approvals in place to service these markets are seeing an automatic, you know, sort of jump, not only in terms of sales, but also in terms of profitability. So that's, you know, just a macro sort of view. If you come down to the three business segments that we have, I'll just try to summarize in a nutshell where the conductor business actually stands. So if I just dial back 10 years ago, most of the business came only from just plain vanilla conductors, aluminum conductors. They were used for transporting power from point to point. And a single specification in terms of the type of product running across the country. Power Grid doing a lot of Power Grid and state electricity boards being the main implementers of it. But from that, today we have got five different verticals that we have brought into the conductor business, which are what we would call premium offerings. So besides the standard conductors, we have a whole range of these high efficiency conductors, which they do two things. One is they carry a higher amount of current. So on the same tower, you can reconduct it, put a new one in place. It can carry anywhere upwards from 25% to 300% more power on the same line. So that's one area that's come up. The second one I already mentioned is this OPGW. And there the advantage we have is our cable plant produces the fiber optic cable, and that gets encapsulated in the conductor plant. And the conductor team then sells the finished OPGW product.
Sorry, can you explain that earlier? Sorry, I missed it. It's OPGW.
So, you know, every transmission line has at the bottom a ground wire, which is an earth wire. For example, if you take a 3-pin plug, you know, the big thing on the top is an earth wire, right? It's for earthing. So same thing, the conductor lines also have an earthing wire in it. So previously it was just a steel wire, galvanized steel wire. Today it's a galvanized steel wire with a fiber optic core. So it's a natural product for us. So that's how, you know, we have APAR and Sterlite are the two major producers of OPGW in the country. The third area that we got into was a range of copper-based products. So one of the things that happened for APAR was that once we bought into this cable business and started growing it, cable has a good share of both aluminum and copper. So aluminum is where APAR already had a lot of expertise because of the conductor division. But copper also, you know, expertise started developing from the cable side. So we brought it into conductors and developed a range of copper-based products. So it coincided with the whole rewiring of, you know, the Indian Railways converting from diesel to electric. So we then got in the catenary wires and the contact wires and became the largest producer of contact and catenary wires. There were a number of existing players, but they had limited scale. So we saw the opportunity, we had the technology and capability in place in-house. So we put in the largest capacity. So that program is now pretty much coming to an end. In 2024, it will pretty much come to an end. But besides that, we also came out with a range of copper transpose conductors, which are used in the core of any transformer. You know, the core winding, you require this type of copper conductors in there. And we've added a range of bus bars. So any electrical installation will have, you know, a copper bus bar from where you then draw connect meters and, you know, all these other equipment that goes finally into houses. And so whether it's an industrial undertaking, whether it's a house, a building, anything has that. So, you know, that's the next offering that we had. And finally, we added a team that was doing turnkey projects. And that was very important for us to deliver high efficiency conductors and OPGW. Because you have to work with the end client to customize a solution, especially in high efficiency conductors. So there what's happening is that the right of way being limited coming into urban areas, when a particular transmission line is getting saturated in terms of how much power it can carry, it needs to be reconducted. So you can carry a significantly higher amount of power. So we saw that opportunity 20 years ago, saying that the amount of electrical consumption going up is increasing. And this problem is going to happen. So we invested in our own R&D, came out with the whole range of products. But, you know, like the problem in India is that the spending will happen only when you have to spend. And that time has come. So, you know, first round, you start seeing these sort of projects getting executed in mega cities like Mumbai, Bangalore, Chennai, Delhi, etc. But today it started percolating into the next tier cities, where actually the electrical consumption growth is even higher as a percentage growth. Like you take a city like Bangalore, for example, where people didn't have air conditioners. You didn't need air conditioning. Now, with all the population density pollution and commercial space coming in, air conditioning has gone up in a huge way. Same thing, you go to Pune, it's exploded. So the reconductoring jobs are coming in for power lines going into all these cities also. And so why we decided on this turnkey is that you actually work with a customer for a customized solution. So you look at the infrastructure that they have, you look at how much power they want to transmit. Then there are other technical requirements of, sag, how much the conductor can sag, etc. You take all these parameters in place and come up with different models in terms of, cost benefit, and work with the client in terms of finally what the client wants. So usually in India, because the government owned or CEA insists on tendering, it still goes through a tender process. But you have, if you sit with them and design the whole line, you know it inside and out, right? In terms of what products, where it's going to go, how it's going to happen. So you tend to bid much more efficiently and effectively on it. So as a result, you need this turnkey business. Also, there are specialized skills when these are on live wire, So they give you an outage, there's current running on the line, they give a shutdown for some hours, and in that period, you start rewiring or reconducting certain sections. You need a different skill set, a lot of certified reconducting, engineers, etc., etc. So it's a different ball game compared to what a typical project that KEC or Kalpataru or Tata Power or L&T would do. So by looking at this, so we classified this set of offerings as, premium offerings that we have. And we've been measuring how much we are able to push and grow this. So from practically single digit numbers, 5 years ago, 5, 7 years ago, it's now 44% of our revenue and our order book also. You take about the 4,800 crore order book, which we have on our earnings call, 44% of it is coming from these offerings.
What is the how is your EBITDA per ton normalized because of this thing? What is the volatility in this and probably related to
So the volatility is actually just depends finally on the mix of the product, which comes in, because all of these products are at different
It is
margin
lower
points.
in the premium segment?
No, it's much the volatility, you mean? Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you do turnkey jobs, because then most of them are fixed price. Moment we get it, we cover the metal immediately. And a lot of it then is in services, and we have tie-ups, we have our own team, we have dedicated contractor teams which are there that go in. But just to complete, so 44% is coming from this. The remaining portion is really conventional conductors which are there. And I think the big change that has happened is that rather than selling it in India, where we were hardly making any margin, we are exporting these products outside India. So the strategy has been to concentrate more domestically on the premium products so that you get the right kind of margin mix. And then moment you've taken standard products and exported them out, again, the profitability is much higher on those. And the logic is very simple. India follows a two-bid process generally, whether it's public sector or it's private, because a lot of the private guys also have come from the PGCIL and NTPCs and of the world. So once you technically clear the product, then they want the cheapest commercial offer, irrespective of where you stand on the quality rating or so. 4,100 is equated with 100 on 100. There's really very little difference. They may want a purchase preference, saying, I'd rather buy from you, but at XYZ's cost. Now, unfortunately, that doesn't work, because usually if you produce a far superior product, there is much more that goes into manufacturing of the product, in fact, even sometimes the tolerances that you have, etc., etc. Moment you go outside India, there is a totally different way in which people are looking at the product. They look at the life cycle cost of a product and not the supply cost of the product. So it's a paradigm shift. Moment you go into that, the quality rating people want, the fast rating, which is 40, can move to 70, 80 or 100, or 90 or 100, depending on how sophisticated the modeling is of the buyer. This is a big change, you know. So the competition level goes down, the expectation of quality is significantly higher. So we've just moved most of our supplies out into, you know, these customers who tend to have much higher standards, which are
expected. So ideally, are these players who are like bidding under TGCC private players, and then they are putting up the transmission lines, and so ideally, are these such players who are probably buying the premium products or solutions from?
No, so TBCB guys are not. The ones who buy the, for whom we do the turnkey today, largely is de-bottlenecking in certain lines of PGCIL and state transmission. Because the state transmission companies are the ones who are bringing power into the cities. So we have to work with those entities. Fortunately, the state transmission companies are actually very well, they have good cash flow, because nobody wants to mess with the transmission company, because you have a generator and you have a receiver, the distribution guy. The cost of transmission is very low comparatively. So suppose the guy is paying 5 rupees, you may be paying 10 paisa, 15 paisa as a wheeling cost.
Yeah.
If you don't pay that, transmission company shuts you out, you're going to get nothing at the end. So the transmission company is paid off first. The guy who latkofied is the generator. That's why you find the dues of generators, which are a problem.
Sure.
And the transmission companies are very strategic in nature, because if you don't fix this at the right time, it takes time, right? It's a live wire. So it will take several quarters for you to slowly change, you know, each section by section, and the power is still being transmitted. You have an outage for a certain period of time.
What is the scope of this reconducting?
Ultimately, every line that's gone into and the problem in India is that people are only looking at a very short term in terms of, I need this much, so bas mera aaj requirement 100 hai, to main 105 ka plan karta. Unlike in other places where they would look at, okay, the life of the line is 35-40 years. What will I need in 35, 40 years or 50 years time? So that's where this whole life cycle cost and all the other things come in, which is what we've been pushing CEA, but they're moving in the right direction, but it's not completely come into the picture. So what happens as a consequence is that the lines which have gone into the bringing the power into the cities all over the country, they just don't have enough spare capacity on them.
So within cities, there was like Mumbai and all these places, you see underground cabling increasing and the overhead.
So Mumbai has always been underground cabling.
But see, are we seeing such trends in other?
In other cities also, it will happen, because you know it's far more expensive, and the right of way is also very, very expensive, and the cost of laying is also significantly higher.
Sure.
So within city, but then you know, within a city, if you don't want, you have a premium building, you don't want a wire running across the building, some aspect safety becomes an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But we've come up with a solution where we have something called a medium voltage covered conductor, which is part of our cable offering, where you have a conductor with insulation on it.
Okay.
So it completely eliminates the safety issue, becomes zero. In fact, we were able to convince Maharashtra MSEDCL. Placed an order on us for about 100 crores for that. We've been supplying in Bangalore, Odisha, many of these places with MBCC. And it's now been included in the RDSS. This whole RDSS.
Okay.
Because, you know, Mumbai is not a good example, but even if you go to a city like Bangalore and you go outside anybody's house, bungalow, you will see a cobweb of wires, you know. So if you want to clean all that up, and if you want to increase the safety, you need to move to this. Also, it has special purpose. Like if it goes through a forest area and you take a large bird or a large animal, an elephant trunk can go across two phases. It'll get electrocuted instantly. The same thing with a bird. If you take a flamingo, you take a peacock, you know, the big bird, right? So they can easily cross two wires, two phases. They'll be burnt in a fraction of a second, maybe. Finished, because transmission is happening at starting at 132,000 volts. What you have here is 220 volts. And you get a shock. You can imagine what happens there when you go across two phases. So once you go to MVCC, this is eliminated. Also, a lot of last mile conductoring is along the highways or the roads. And in India, we have planting trees along that. So you go on a road, right? You see trees on either side. So when the branches grow, again, it can short the wire. So in our own plant in Khatalwad, in the monsoon, we have every 15 days, we have a crew that take permission from the, and we pay for the pruning of the trees. And now finally, they're putting an MVCC solution in place. Once you put it in place, problem is eliminated.
Yeah, on the premiumization, we have done well in wire and conductor, and some of this you envisage much back. But if you look at specialty oil and lubrication, just what's the outlook there, and what is the possibility of premiumization?
So, you know, actually, the company originally started with trying to premiumize products in the specialty oil business. And the first area which we really managed to get global acclaim in is in transformer oil, you know, moving up in terms of the, you know, the voltage levels which were there. Then on the automotive side, you know, we were looking at various, first, I'll just tell you the competitive landscape. What happens in the specialty oil side is, that other than transformer oil, where we've reached, you know, to be the third largest in the world, when you look at lubricants, you are dealing with really with gigantic companies. Each company is, if you take in the GDP ranking, they will all rank in the top 100 in the world. You have ExxonMobil, you have Chevron, you have Shell, you have Valvoline, you have Total Energy. All of these, Fuchs, which is the largest industrial oil and specialty lubricant manufacturer in the world out of Germany, every one of them is present in India. So the, not that we are not growing and not that we are not taking market share, but when you want to take market share from somebody like this, and then you've got the three PSUs, IOC, HPC, BPC, where the lubricant sale, they are not measured on profitability, they're measured on volume. Because, you know, they run a refinery, they need to evacuate X amount of product, and a lubricant is more valuable generally than selling a raw material base oil. So to gain share there is much more difficult. If I have to grow turnover by 100 crores in lubricants, it's far more difficult than for me to grow turnover of 100 crores in conductor. And conductor is more difficult than growing the 100 crore in cable. Because a cable addressable market, Indian market is 65,000 crores. You know, if you look at the entire lubricant market, you're looking at 15,000 crores. And you're looking at who are you competing with in the cable market. So the cable market, you have very entrenched players on the LT house wire side. You have Polycab, which is the largest. Then you have Havells, which is very well branded. Then you have RR Cables, you have Phenolex, and now you have KEI, which is, so these are the top five players in there. But they're mostly growing and focused on the power cable and the house wire side. So we saw the field being opened on specialty cables. It's like how we grew our specialty lubricant business, basically trying to find solutions for clients, you know. The same thing we saw here. So there were products in the mining side, railways, navy, defense. This renewable energy, when it came up new, we were the first guys to get approval for panel wiring, you know, what they call string cables for the solar panels. Then solar evacuation. It's an LT cable only, but slightly modified. Then we invested in manufacturing cables for the inside the windmills, where we have about 75% market share. Invested money on the e-beams for getting into rolling stock, you know, for locomotives and coaches. That area, none of these five guys were, their focus was a power cable. So all of them put EHV capacity, extra high voltage. We said, forget extra high voltage. You know, these guys are already there. We concentrate on what, you know, we are comfortable with. So today, we are 3,000 crores revenue. Polycab is, I think, whatever, 12,000 or something in the cable side, 12 or 14,000 on the cable side. But our range of cables is at least 5x of their range because it's more solution based.
Of the 65,000 crore market that is there for the segments that you operate, what is your addressable market?
So we have products now other than EHV, which is a small fraction of that. It's a couple thousand.
That's my focus here. So
yeah,
where your focus.
It's bulk of the 65,000. By getting into this house wire range and stuff, the house wire is about half the market. Remaining cables is half the market. So we were first addressing only half the market. Now we have started a range of, you know, the light duty cables, which is the other half of the market. Besides this, what we see is that for all the specialty cables, windmills, you know, solar, rolling stock, the world is our market. Why do we have to? Because when we developed our products, we didn't develop it based on only Indian specifications.
So you are
developed it looking at IEC, looking at ESTM, all these other.
So standards. Most of your products are now approved with all global.
Many of them, like entire windmill range is approved by all the top. Take the top 10 windmill manufacturers, including two in China. So we have approval from all 10 of them. If you take solar, we have the, you know, there's a TUV, which is the standard, German standard, which is accepted all over the world. So from day one, we made sure that our cable met the TUV standard. So then the US requires something called Underwriters Laboratory. Every cable tie requires a UL certification. So it takes about 6 months and it costs anywhere between 20-25 lakhs at the low end to about 40-50 lakhs at the high end for one approval. We have the largest number of UL approvals in the country amongst the cable manufacturers. So that's what has allowed us on the cable side. Because of this strategy, we've been able to leapfrog from being nowhere in terms of export to now in FY23, I think we'll be the largest exporter of cables in India.
What's the number? In crores, what would that number be?
So, 50 crores. We are about, it's almost close to 50% of our revenue. So, we'll be at about 1500 crores.
Okay.
If you take 2 years ago, we are not even doing 150 crores. It's a big jump. And I think it's not that we didn't want to do it. We two things. One is that we improved the product profile to meet what the markets require. But it took some time to get the certification. And once we got the certification in place, the immediate demand was not there. Now, today, electricity is the only way in urban areas for you to reduce your pollution. Because the problem is what? It's a very simple problem. You have a very high population density. So if you use devices in that high density, which are polluting, the pollution concentration is very high. That's why Beijing, Mumbai, Mexico City, Delhi, high concentration of people driving cars, doing this, that, all that pollution level high. The simplest way is you take away these polluting devices, you'll have a dramatic reduction in the emissions, you know, bad quality air, all those sort of problems, they'll just go away. So with this whole, you know, carbon emission footprint, that is happening.
You said this 1500 crores export revenue, what was it 2-3 years back, you said?
Just a couple hundred crores from the cable division.
Oh, okay.
1500 is only cable.
No, I got your point. Yeah. I was just that.
Yeah.
From which sector we are getting so much demand? Solar, wind, from
the... Solar, wind, from the... From the railways, from, because you know every metro requires a huge amount.
I'm talking this 1500 crores, yeah. The export we are talking about, and that also it's
the largest market we have for export today is the United States. If you take cable and conductor, it is after India, number two is the US, and the story has just begun there. Yes.
We have also got some tailwind due to the duty structure, right? So how can you just talk about how sustainable that is?
So the tailwind is
goes away.
I think the tailwind has come right now only from the US.
Okay.
India is in the process of changing FTA. We just got an FTA that's become effective in January from Australia, and I think UAE is becoming effective now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, either March or April or something. But the US is still the same. They're working on it. EU is still the same. We still pay 3.8%. What's happened is that some of these guys have really taken seriously this China plus one. And in the US, the Chinese duty has shot up from 0 to 25, 30, 35%, depending on the product.
Yeah.
Which is there. But we are finding some of our customers, you know, they've taken undertaking from us. You will not use a single Chinese product. Five countries, they don't want you to use any product. To give an undertaking. One of them is China, the other one is Iran, you know, who popularly known. The third one now is Russia. You have to give an undertaking. So we cannot use Russian aluminum, even though in India you can buy Russian aluminum. You can't use it in there.
So if I remove the duty structure parity on a just cost basis, what is the differential between ours and maybe same quality Chinese today? So if the duty structure goes away, we might be still. So just efficiency and cost efficiencies, if you could throw some light on that.
So, you know, in terms of cost efficiencies, on the conductor side and even in some of the cables, we are pretty much today at par. You know, I'll give you an example. 3 years ago, our conversion cost, average conversion cost, or whatever cables we produced, right? We were at about 11% of the sales value. Today, we are at 5.5%. So some of it has come because of the type of cables, but a large portion of it has come because of efficiency that we've driven. So it comes from scale as well as producing more product out of the, you know, productivity of the equipment. And we've started a major 4.0, industry 4.0 program, where we are starting to get, you know, the automated capturing 24/7 of data. Because that's the starting point for productivity, right? You know exactly where you're running faster, slower, change over times. By focusing on all that. So I think efficiency-wise, we are pretty much there. We have a level playing field. We can compete. But in countries like the US and Australia, these two places particularly, they are really wanting to diversify out of Chinese products.
Okay. So you think this could, rather than being a temporary,
it could be a far longer scenario. So when we, however, you know, in our guidance, because conductors may, what has happened, you've seen, basically we were running at 8 to 12,000 rupees a ton. If you took, you know, rewind to about 3 years ago, and then you take the previous 8-10 years, we were always in that bracket. Today, by looking at the mix of product we have, that itself can take you to that 22 to 25,000. In addition to that, there are certain tailwinds, like what you're talking about, you know, where a preference is given to buy a non-Chinese product. You know, if an FTA comes in place, now two of them, we've got orders from Australia. Now the profitability on that will increase by 4%. Because some of it, our customer, because they were taking it on FOB basis, they will benefit. But whatever we are delivering to Sydney Metro, to Sydney's over now, we are bidding on Brisbane and Adelaide Metro, etc. We become 4% more competitive. And anyway, we are meeting the price point to win the job. So now our profitability goes up by 4%. So some of these tailwinds, you know, if you don't count them, then you're looking at that 22 to 25,000 per ton. Because fundamentally, the business has changed. Now, if you take more ACCC, for example, at the upper end of the high efficiency conductors, the margin is higher than if you supply, you know, one of the more, you know, standard type of high efficiency conductors.
So the market is also shifting to the premium.
It is shifting over there. But, you know, the format finally depends on my customer, you know. I may try to push for any format, but see, it's a regulated industry at the end of the day, and it's a concentrated industry. So the utility has to finally decide. What we are trying to educate people to make sure that we can maintain a higher profitability in our conductor business and to some extent even the cable business is to look at the life cycle cost of a product, which is a very established system that exists outside India and has been existing for decades. If you take the US, if you take the standard there, it is called ASTM. It's an Australian military standard. So all these products went in after World War II, basically, you know, from at 1945, you know, after the Great Depression, if you study your economics or whatever, this huge boom was there, right? It was an investment-led boom and huge infrastructure went in. So that was from, you know, the late 40s, right up to 70, until that oil shock took place. That was the bulk of the, you know, infrastructure going in. The military set the standards. ASTM, there's such a high standard they set, you know. That's why the life of these products is expected to be 35 years, but they still not changed it. Now it's reaching end of life, you know. It's what is gone in 1950. You're looking at now, what, 70 odd years. It was supposed to last 35 years, already lasted double. That's the life cycle which our people are still not, they're not understanding. And if suppose you change a line, right, you look at the cost of aluminum in rupees. 5 years ago, look at the cost of aluminum in rupees today. There's a huge inflation, labor inflation. So if your line lasts less towards the end of the life cycle of the product, the cost of replacement then is like astronomically high compared to what you would have premium you would have paid if you took that into account on day one. So Bangladesh, for example, is going with very high level specification. Why? Because Asian Development Bank is lending them the money. They don't have the money. The payment is over a period of 25, 30 years. The World Bank or Asian Development Bank wants to make sure that they don't have to fund another line until this line is paid for. So they are bound to look at the life cycle cost of the product. Here we are working on our own balance sheet. So people are doing their own championship game. Maybe 5% either bachao, 4% either bachao. But in a life cycle, you end up hurting from it.
With current realizations, 20-25K that you say, and whatever capacities are, what are the peak revenues that we can do with current capacity?
So, you know, right now, we are running pretty much flat out on our conductor side. The cable is running at 90%+ capacity if you take overall. Power cable is running flat out. Elasto is running flat out, you know. So, we are going through with a capex of around 350 crores. And if you look at the just a rule of thumb, you know, at a macro level, what could be the sales to asset to sale ratio? It's anywhere between, depending on the mix, anywhere between maybe about 7 times to 10 times. So you can easily go, you know, up to an addition of about 3,500.
What's the capacity come on stream?
So we've already started ordering equipment because, you know, today, the delivery times have become extremely long for capital goods. We've already ordered it will get commissioned in the, you know, starting up from March, April onwards, it will start getting commissioned. So whatever is going into our existing premises, will get commissioned in the next few months. What is going into new sites, that will take, you know, about 7-8 months, 9 months. Starting from that point
on. In FY25 should completely commission,
So it continuously, because there's, you know, there's stuff going in within our existing place. Part of this capex is also productivity capex. Because, you know, today we've reached, see, when it was set up, you didn't know what the mix was going to be. Because, you know, we have a saying in our company saying the maximum fiction in the world that has been written is on Excel spreadsheets. So you plan something out, right? And then, you know, the market goes in some other direction, customer requirements. So when you're setting something up initially, you have to build a lot of more flexibility because you don't know which way the market is going to grow. Today, we have so much more predictability that now you can change some of the old equipment and make it dedicated to certain products and get maybe 40-50% more productivity. And then you use that equipment somewhere else. So a combination of all this is going in. But I think in 2 years' time, the entire 350, between 18 and 24 months, this entire 350
is for cable.
Cables and conductors put together. Because you see, cable also, the upstream is the same. Like, for example, the US market requires a specific alloy. If we buy that alloy from Hindalco or from Vedanta, they don't alloy it as well as we do because they don't produce a finished product. They don't have that feedback cycle. It's natural. Na? When you're doing end-to-end, you keep on fine-tuning your product to meet those requirements. So we are putting in rolling mills. We are putting in wire drawing. you know, annealing, stranding, the whole. So the conductor can also use it, and the cable also can use it. Some of it is more cable
specific. Oil business, oil side to the transformer.
The oil side has got a lot of capacity available. So for our lubricant side, which is your industrial automotive, we run on two shifts. So basically, you can entire third shift is available. And on the specialty oil side, you know, we have a lot of expansion room, because what we've done over the last
capacity would not be required.
No. And I'll tell you what happens here and why. Because what we've done is that we've dramatically improved our processability of products.
Right.
So we no longer blend products, you know, for like transformer oil, white oil. We can blend products in 2000 KL tanks. We can blend 2 million liters in a tank. We've developed air blending, you know, a whole lot of processes that are in. So capacity is not a big, it's not a big problem. So in fact, out of this 350 crores, hardly 25-30 crores is going to go into the oil side.
Your current order book, 4,800 crores.
That's only cable.
That's only cable.
Sorry, 4,800 is a conductor.
Okay, so do you build an order book for your cables as well?
So, you know, the cable order book is, it rolls much, much more. So you don't have longer, you don't have such a long lead time. But even then, if you see, I don't have the exact number. It's about
1,200.
But the deliveries are pretty quick.
So
that order book, other than for nuclear power and all, would be all within 3-4 months.
Okay. That's right. So what was this number like 3-5 years back? If it was 4,800, which on a backlog that you have, typically on a year basis, how much of order book you used to book for maybe 4-5 years back? And what it,
so if you take a number of months, actually the number of months may the order book hasn't gone up. In fact, in some cases it has gone down, because when Power Grid used to place orders, they would place orders for straight 18 months delivery schedule. So these are much shorter delivery schedules, and particularly the EPC guys, they have to deliver fixed price, and we don't take any speculation on the metal. So our customer has to tell us, then we will back to back, you know, block the metal. So
what is the delivery time with now, sir?
So it depends. So today, most guys want shorter delivery because there's so much volatility on, you know, metals and stuff like that.
It's number of days or months.
Yeah, so it will vary. So in some cases, it's 3 months, you know, going up to maybe 6 months, but 7 months. So it's, yeah, so much faster.
So you're on the conductor side?
Yeah, conductor only I'm talking. Much faster. Much faster deliveries. And they're ready to, customer ready to pay a premium for
delivery.
If you can just give us perspective on the margins front in the three businesses. Yeah. Earlier there was a lot of volatility, and now we probably have a much better revenue mix. So, like, what should we keep in mind? Like,
so you know, if you take we sort of discussed it in the last call also. So cable business, you know, we are seeing a double digit 10% EBITDA. And then depending on, you know, more specialty products, this that can be, it can go upward from that. And we are currently at around that level for this year. Last quarter was almost 12%, but
YTD at
10%. 9.8.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take the last quarter, it'll go a little over 10 for the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
And then that becomes like a base case for us, you know, to go forward. If you then come to the conductor business, you know, if you take away all these tailwinds I mentioned, you know, 22,000 to 25,000 per metric ton, that's what we've given earlier. So that's what, you know, is a steady base case. Any tailwinds are there, it'll help you go above that.
20,000 to 25,000 per ton realization in conductors.
EBITDA per ton.
EBITDA per ton.
Cable is 10%. Conductor is 22,000 to 25,000. Rupees per metric ton.
That's a beta.
EBITDA. That's the base case, which used to be earlier, you know, 12,000, 8,000, 12,000. It's clearly doubled just because of the.
It's 44% primary.
Yeah, 44%. Right now we have, it's much higher. It's that if you take the 9 months, we are at almost 40,000. It's because we are able to export the product, you know, to the US and all these markets. My sense is that it will continue. But we are getting good pricing, you know. from these markets relative to what you're getting over here?
10,000 EBITDA can try to you.
9 months is at 40,000 per ton. So some of it is because there is a tailwind on freight. You know, wherever the DDP contracts were, we had got screwed when the freight rates went up because the customers are hey, DDP is DDP, you all look out. So now we are gaining from the other side of the cycle. So at the end of the period, actually, we may end up gaining as opposed to losing because there's much more value of contracts. During the COVID period, people didn't want to take on big jobs because there was not enough predictability, right?
And similarly, if you can give some sense on the...
And then on the oil side, the specialty oil side, we've been around 5,000 to 5,500 is what we are running at. We continue to run at that.
What is a 3,500 kind of number?
We've been actually closer to 5,000 for some time now. There may be some periods where it has gone down and gone up. During this COVID period, the oil business had a lot of tailwinds. We've gone up to 7,000, 8,000.
5 to 5,500 per kiloliter.
Yeah, if you model it over 5 years, 7 years, you can take
overall on an annual basis.
If you build a 5-year, 7-year model, you can easily take these. That's what at least we do our own internal modeling in, because you plan for the worst and hope for the best, right? So that scenario is basically this.
So conductor now, today you are doing 14,000. What should we
look 40,000.
40,000, sorry. Huh. So what should we look forward?
Not only I'm saying, on an absolute steady state basis, rain or shine, take away all the tailwinds which are there, etc. We should be between 22 and 25,000 is like a absolute base case.
In groups, you said there's no point competing because there are many. So we're not competing, but it's a difficult market. So if I come to transformer oils, is there something like a conductor or wires in place that, or it's we are third largest? So will it be demand led, or there could be a moment wherein?
So here transformer oil is purely demand led because whatever transformer you put in there, there is a certain percentage of oil that goes into it. So if you take the entire oil basket, transformer oil is one place where you will continuously see growth because as the electrical infrastructure grows, the amount of transformation of electricity required will proportionately increase, and therefore the oil requirement will go up.
It will be a function of new installation, or there could be a lot of replacement oil, or that's not all?
It's normally led by new installation, but there is also a certain amount of replacement that goes in. 3-4% of the installed base is the replacement.
Okay.
On an average, that goes in. But it's really led by new infrastructure. That's going in. A lot of new infrastructure is going in worldwide. We also have the largest manufacturer, Nina's, out of Sweden, which went into bankruptcy. They've changed 3 owners in the last 3 years. So that has also helped to some extent, where we've been able to push and grow. But this kind of, so we see about 5% growth, in that segment. On our lubricant side, we see growth on the industrial, where we are growing and continuously doing well. We're getting more and more approvals. And as India is getting more sophisticated in manufacturing, automatically the lubricant, you put more machinery, you need more lubrication. It's a straight function of that. The automotive side is where you will start seeing a lot of changes happening. Because our sense is that the effect is going to come of this whole electrification, this EV hybrid business, in 2 major areas. One is public transportation. All CNG will become EV, basically. All your rickshaws, buses, taxis, all that, ultimately, they move from diesel and petrol to CNG, move to electric. Second area is in personal mobility in urban areas. Because you can build a network within Mumbai. So if you have a scooter, you're not going to use that scooter to go from here to Surat. But you will use it to travel within Mumbai, and you can get that 100, this kilometer range will go up to 100, 200 kilometers. Already the government here in Mumbai, public parking or any new building, every 5th, 20% has to have an electric charging point under the new laws which are there. So your two-wheeler will actually get affected quite a lot because that's the easiest to switch. And the ticket size also is, and the government will give incentives. They're already giving. The second one that will get affected is your four-wheeler mobility, cars. But we see that, you know, your trucks and that's cargo movement. And agriculture will take a long time. So that's why we have been focusing a lot on agriculture probably. Because it's not really the government's great incentive. The farmer wants it for free. So the more the government gives power to these guys, that much more free power will go. So the equation doesn't fit. And secondly, you know, the farms are all spread out. We create that infrastructure. You need a full cabling infrastructure and all that. It's a big, very long. So the quick gains on emissions isn't urban gains. So this is, I mean, our two cents opinion on it. So that's where our strategy is, you know, focused around that. So we've been building a portfolio. We are one of the largest suppliers today into the agri-tech sector. So we supply TAFE Eicher, which is the second largest. We don't have any business with Mahindra. We have a problem with their model. They basically want a lubricant supplier to become a toll manufacturer. Saying, if you have to toll, why would you toll for you? We'll toll for some other companies where I can get a higher margin. Right? So so there's TAFE Eicher, then we supply Sonalika. We just got approval now for all the products that Sonalika wants to export, because they're exporting, they're planning to export even into Europe and all that, you know, the lower end tractors. We are covering Escorts. So we cover 2, 3, and 4. We're not doing 2 and 5, which is, and then a lot of smaller people are there, you know, in that pre-TAO. So we cover all these guys. So we have a good, and we have the best product for oil immersed brakes. UTTO and oil immersed brakes for tractors, we have the best product in the market. So that's how we've been gaining, you know, share in that area. Bakika, we are trying to grow our, you know, the industrial is growing. We are trying to improve our distribution footprint. For the automotive, you know, stuff. But there is going to be a lot of change here. You will see mobility side coming down for sure.
When do you say on the export side, when are we doing exports? Is it directly to OEM or tire ones or tire twos, or it's to distributors? And
so the US market is actually split. We do certain amount of supply to EPC companies that directly. So if you take the utility market in the US, it's very strange. Most people may not understand it. It has about 3,000 plus utilities, of which 30 of them are of gigantic size. And the remaining 2,970 are really small. So to service those 2,900 odd utilities, you need a distribution setup, because those guys don't want to stock anything. They want 24-hour service, you know, on any replacement or whatever. So because of that, it's distribution led for standard. So what we do is we follow two strategies. We have relationship with out of the top 10 importers, we are working with three of these top 10 importers who we supply, we stock and we sell. And then we work with EPC players where we supply them direct.
And the payment,
payment is generally not a problem. We have we take ECGC cover for, so that covers 90%, because the US doesn't work on LCs. They work on all direct. But we, so far, you know, we are quite careful in terms of who we deal with. Okay. And we've tried to keep ourselves within the ECGC limits. In fact, ECGC has been a major positive surprise. You know, when we started growing the US business, obviously, we didn't have, you know, the ECGC normally goes on historical data, right? But now what to do? Suddenly, the requirement has gone up twofold, threefold. So we asked for a meeting with the senior management there. And to our pleasant surprise, I think there were about 15 top people of ECGC came for that meeting. They wanted to understand, you know, what's happening in the US markets and global markets. And after we presented, it was almost an hour-long presentation, an hour-long Q&A. And then they have been quite fast in looking. Not that they give you to anyone and everyone, but we've not seen them act with so much of speed. You know, compared to before. So
this is not each product you mentioned.
For cables and conductors.
Both.
See, in oil, what happens is that as a company, we have a blanket approval of $2 million per customer. So most of the customers are falling under a $2 million cycle.
For billing.
Huh?
For billing or annual number?
No, no. So this is at any given time the exposure. So if you have a 30 days, then it'll rotate once a month. If you have 90 days, it'll rotate four times. Like that. For India to export more, you need all this sort of stuff to function. It's not just ports and it's the banks. It's, you know, we've got increased lines from banks. There are more banks today willing to do factoring or forfeiting, as they call it. And otherwise, they wanted some ridiculous prices. And you have big ticket factoring. So all that is coming in.
We have debt on the books.
So we long term debt is very minimal, but we have working capital debt.
Okay. And this 350 crore capex would be mostly internal approval, or you take some?
No, so we plan to take a borrowing for it, because we really don't have any long term debt on our books. We have less than 200 crores. So 50 crore will get paid in this quarter. It'll go down to 150 crore. So it's, you know, it works out well, and we want to keep, you know, the strength of our company is to always maintain some headroom in the balance sheet, because, you know, working capital, if you're going to grow at this pace, the banks look that when they give you working capital funding, a certain portion of it is contributed by the company.
What's the internal target, like, you know, case of 3 years, 4 years, what are you?
So our sense is that the conductor business can grow at 25% a year. Sorry, the cable business. The conductor business will grow in double digit because of premiumization as well as volume. And the oil business, we expect, you know, growth of about 5% a year, approximately. Bottom line can easily grow at 25%. So this year is like a huge jump up. But if you take an average of the last 2 years and then, you know, extrapolate, then that's the more... look at our business, you need to look at rolling 24 months. Then you get you can really then see the trend.
Yeah, TT. Doesn't the high base present a challenge for you for the next year? It's a tremendous base which you've got.
Because, you know, yes. So I'm not so sure that you'll get a 25% growth over what, you know, this year we've already done close to 400 crores PAT. I mean, the last quarter, you know, we said on the call also, okay, if you extrapolate it, it'll be 130 crores, right? Approximately 125 odd crores. So next year to expect a 25% growth on that is very difficult, or may not happen. But if you take a long term, you know, you average out the last 2 years and then take a trend line, you can see a 20 odd percent growth.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Thank you.
And we have actually upgraded our presentation on our website. So it has a lot of more information.
Sure.
Thank you. Yeah.